You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. Since 2009, HRN podcasts have been exploring the wide world of food, beverage, and agriculture. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Ithaca. Explore Ithaca's waterfalls, orchards, and craft beverage scene. Plan your getaway at visitithaca.com.
Welcome to Pizza Quest. I'm Peter Reinhardt, a man on a never-ending search for the perfect pizza. This show is the audio version of the Pizza Talk YouTube series, where I engage in interesting conversations with some of the country's greatest pizza makers and other artisans. Thanks for joining me on this quest.
Welcome back to Pizza Quest. I'm Peter Reinhardt. It's a new episode, but we're back with one of our favorite guests, Mark Todd, the cheese dude. Welcome back, dude.
Thanks, Peter.
Yeah, and Mark's coming to us, as usual, from hidden retreat on the Russian River in what do we call when I lived out there, we used to call the West County.
That's right? We're in West County, on the Russian River here.
Yeah, which is Western Sonoma County, The way to the ocean. Very cool area. Woods, forests, mushrooms, you name it. We've talked about all that in the past. One of these days, we're going to do a mushroom show with you, but we're still working our way through cheeses.
Lots to know on cheese. Lots to know.
Well, we've done pasta filata, which is the mozzarella style cheeses. We did a session on cheddar cheeses, which of course I think both confessed to loving. I love cheddar cheeses, I wasn't sure if I was like this sort of, you know, outlier out there, that because cheddar always seems to be taken for granted. But I was so glad to hear that you feel the same way about cheddar cheeses as I do.
Absolutely.
But today we're going to get into hard dried aged cheeses. Mm-hmm. And I, under your urging, I bought a couple of small pieces of different types. And I know you've got a plate of different types. And so you're going to take us through. Let me tell you which ones I've got today, Mark, and then you'll tell us the order that we'll take them. So this is one that is a goat cheese. It's from Cypress Grove, one of our favorite cheese companies in Northern California. They, what's the most famous one of theirs?
The Humble Fog.
Humble Fog, wonderful soft cheese with the ash in there. But this is a dried cheese. This is an aged cheese. And they call it Midnight Moon. It's softer than some of the other cheeses, but it's dry and aged compared to something like, regular goat cheese. I've got some Piave Vecchio, and which I was trying to find Asiago, and they didn't have any at Whole Foods when I was shopping there, but they suggested we get this. They said it's kind of in the similar vein.
Yep, very similar. It's in the same vein. Absolutely.
So, and of course, we're going to talk about what makes all of these cheeses different from each other. We've got I've got two types of Goudas here. I've got...
Actually, you had three.
I think I have... Well, let me see. I've got this one here, which is a Casaggio Robusto, which is a 10-month-aged Gouda. Let me see.
Somebody's buzzing.
Yeah, it's my... My realtor. I'm going to have to just let me tell her that I can't. As you can see, we're moving.
Absolutely.
I'm going to tell her that I'm going to call her later. Okay. So this is a 10-month. But then I also picked up.
Right.
Where did it go? My 36-month-old aged Gouda. You pronounce it Gouda?
The Dutch would pronounce it like K-H-O-W-D-A. Gouda.
Gouda. Uh-huh. And of course, and as an American, I always have called it Gouda, but you can see, boy, a thick rind on that and a whole different characteristic. Oh. So we're going to see how those.
And just to let you see what happens when that cheese gets even older. See the color on that one?
My gosh, yes.
That's 10 years.
A 10-year-aged Gouda.
10-year-aged Gouda.
So you're going to tell us what happens during those interim six and a half years. I've got a piece of course, we can't do an aged cheese session without Parmigiano Reggiano.
Yep.
And so this is the real deal from right from the Parma region. I also have a, what we think it's a, it was in, I had it in my refrigerator. I pulled it out and Mark, I think you've identified it as possibly an American.
I believe that's an American style Parmesan. Yes. Parm.
So we'll see how those two kind of compare. And I've also got, let me see, we've got my Robusta. We've got,
you got your sheep milk.
And then there's one here called Mitica. Oh, this is a 24-month. Oh, this is the Parmesan.
Right.
Okay, that's, and then, but I've got that's another one here.
Mitica is a brand name.
It's a, okay.
The other one you have is probably like Locatelli or something like that. That is the Romano.
That is my Romano.
The Pecorino Romano.
Yeah, so that is a.
And did you get real Italian?
It's, I didn't get any real Italian. I just had the, I could only get the Locatelli.
Locatelli is American. Locatelli is Italian. Made? No, that's Italian.
Italian made.
Yeah, that's so, the biggest maker.
So it's a Pecorino Romano, mm-hmm. which means made from sheep's milk, correct?
Correct.
Pecorino. So we've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I've got 7 cheeses here. And then awesome. You've got a couple that I don't have. So I think we're going to be cheesing all the way.
Indeed.
Where should we start?
Well, for on your plate, I would start with that the youngest of the Goudas, the goat's milk Gouda, the Midnight Moon. That is a goat's milk Gouda that's aged about 6 or more months. It's actually made in Amsterdam, or I mean in the Netherlands.
It is,
And it's imported by Cypress Grove.
Okay, so. So just because it says Cypress Grove doesn't mean that it was made in...
If you read the label, it says imported by Cypress Grove, made in the Netherlands. They bring 2 cheeses. They bring a sheep's milk called Lamb Chopper and the Midnight Moon that are both Gouda-style cheeses made in the Netherlands. And brought over to the U.S. They started about 6 months aged. I like them in about 12 months. That's a beautiful cut right there.
So this one says how many, you said about how many months did you say this was
aged? Minimum six, but they're usually around 8, between 8 and 12 by the time you get them at a store.
So what makes it a Gouda or a Gouda style cheese?
Every name of cheese in the world, whether it's Parmesan, cheddar, Gouda, those are recipes. That is a specific recipe that tells you this is what kind of rennet you should use. This is the temperature you want to heat the milk to. This is how long you do it. There you go. Perfect. Now, when you cut into that, you're going to see that you cut right clean through it. It's dense. It's a bit fudgy. Texture-wise, you can squeeze it. You can still squeze it.
Yeah.
That'll be the youngest cheese on your plate, and that one will be quite it's fudgy. It's dense. It's denser than cheddar, but it has a little bit of a waxiness to it that cheddar does not have.
That waxiness, exactly what I'm tasting, yes.
That waxiness will become more evident as the cheese ages.
And the fudginess is I think if you create maybe there exists a flavor wheel of the
working on it. We're working on it.
Of every of textures and flavors. Fudgy is one that, you know, is great. It's great analogy to what we're tasting here.
It's a bit sweet. It's got a little bit of a earthy background to it that comes from the being a goat's milk. That you won't get that earthiness in some of the other cheeses because of it. This one is a goat's milk cheese. Yeah. And the way the fat breaks down in goat's milk is a little different than it does in cow's milk.
It's awesome though. It's incredibly
beautiful cheese.
Yeah.
Very smooth, perfect texture all the way through. Even just like butter, you know, just perfect, like cream all the way through.
Well, yeah. But what do people generally do with this cheese? Straight ed.
Huh? Yep, it's just straight in the mouth. This is not a. I mean, you could cook with it. It melts like crazy. But why would you do that to a cheese that's that beautiful? Eat it with some a dark beer and some soft pretzels and a little coarse mustard, it would be an outstanding little, you know, snack.
So that's a good point that you're bringing up, Mark, is that while some cheeses are great, you know, grated over pasta and, you know, mixed with sauce and stuff, that there's some cheeses that are just so, what's the word? The flavors are just so complex and subtle that you wouldn't want to muddle them up with a bunch of other other ingredients. You just want to eat them and enjoy them in their fullness.
Here's an interesting statistic, and I haven't got it's not current, but as far as I know, it's still accurate. The United States consumes a little more percent of the cheese in our country is consumed as a part of a cooked dish.
What was that percentage again? The screen froze up for a second.
About 85% of the cheese consumed in the U.S. is consumed as part of a cooked dish. About 15% is served as table cheese.
Well, that makes sense when you think about all the cheese that gets used on pizzas and on pastas and things like that.
But go to Europe, it's exactly the opposite. 15% goes in a dish, 85% is eaten as a table cheese.
Because they've grown up learning to love the nuance.
Exactly. And now it's not that you wouldn't add things to this, but you would add things like a drizzle, like a balsamico or a honey or a date molasses or something like that. And maybe some smoked nuts, smoked almonds, and, you know, just little things like that that are flavor bursts of their own.
Yes.
But they're there just to complement this incredible depth of flavor that you've got in an aged cheese.
The fact that this cheese is made with, is a goat's milk cheese, right? This, mm-hmm. this is a,
just the midnight moon.
Yeah. But goat's milk is not the normal way, right? Isn't it generally Gouda is usually a cow's milk cheese?
Correct. If you ever go to the Netherlands, you will see that it is the land of cows. Lots of cows.
But so the fact that it's still called in the category of Gouda would be that it's because it's of the recipe.
Exactly.
And does the recipe involve the microorganisms or the temperatures of the
Yes, they'll tell you what cultures go into it, how much of each type of culture, you know, in your starter culture, there may be 20 different bacteria that can be used as part of a starter culture. And your recipe calls for like a Chinese menu, you know, one from column A, three from column B, and that's your recipe there. Within that frame of Gouda, there is subtle differences you can make with slight percentage differences in the culture you use, the procedures you make, how you cut the curd, the shape you cut the curd, the size, you know, how long it sits, how long you cook it. All those things will make a difference. So each small change can make subtle differences within a family of cheese, within a recipe. And then that recipe can be completely different than another recipe. Cream cheese is not like Parmesan.
Yeah, well, that's what I was going to say. So the family of Gouda cheeses, so this style is going to be a very different recipe than, say, Asiago or Parmesan or even Romano. So it's not just the type of milk. There's a whole recipe of microorganisms and would you say is the
and technique the process. The biggest differences are temperature you cook the milk at.
Yeah.
Size that you cut the curd, length of time you cook it, how much salt and when you add it, how much you press it. Those are all things that will dramatically influence the end result.
I may have asked you this in our very first session, but don't remember if I did, and I should have, and I need to, it's pressing on me right now as we talk about this. How many different kinds of cheeses categorically are there and, you know, styles? I mean, if there's got to be, you know, some sort of a book that says there are, wasn't there a De Gaulle or somebody said, how can I govern a country that makes 350 different kinds of cheeses? But there's got to be thousands of cheeses.
There are. And the short answer is nobody knows because they're literally making up new cheeses daily, weekly, monthly, yearly. there every year at the American Cheese Society, there are probably 100 new cheeses represented that have never been made in the world before. And the great thing about cheese is that it every step of the process produces the end result. And just the difference in when you cut the curd, 1 minute difference is a different cheese. That is a different product. It will come out slightly different. Is it almost the same? Yep. But it's not the same. Well, and that's why you can have literally the best guess is somewhere over 3,000 right now around the world.
Wow. Well, it makes sense. I mean, because it truly highlights the artisanness, the artisan quality that it's in the hands of the maker to make the difference. Just like bread makers, you know, they can all follow a French bread recipe, but the breads are all going to come out different based on
absolutely
the hands.
And so, and that's why in most real high-end cheese making, if you want to become a cheese maker of that cheese, you learn at the feet of people that have been doing it for 20 or 30 years.
Yeah.
That's how you learn, by watching them do it and repeating exactly what they do the same way they do it every time, every day.
It's a craft that is passed on. Probably the oral tradition is the most effective way of passing on oral and tactile. Well, I've got a second piece of cheese here.
Great.
In the Gata family now. This one is called Casago Robusto. It's 10-month aged. And they list it as, they just call it a 10-month aged Dutch cheese.
Yes.
But it's in this family. So 10 months. It's about the same aging as the goat's milk cheese that we just tasted, but this one is probably cow's milk, wouldn't you say?
That one is cow's milk. It's pasteurized cow's milk using an animal rennet, I believe. It is older. That's at least four or five months older than the first one. You'll notice it's denser. It has starting to crumble, not just creamy. And if you look at it closely, you'll see there's a lot of open holes or open spaces in the face of the cheese.
I'm seeing those. Yes. For those people who are listening to this podcast and not watching it on the video, while I'm holding it up and we're seeing some of the holes, not as many as a Swiss cheese, but certainly a few holes.
Right.
But there's also something else I'm noticing, Mark. There's a granularness, some crystallization going on in here.
You're just starting to see that. There's two different styles of granularization or crystallization. One of them is tyrosine. One of them is a lactate that comes out. And they start to come out, depending upon the style of cheese, somewhere between 8 and 10 months. By 10 to 12 months, they're starting to be noticeable. Over 10 to 12 months, in almost every cheese, they become noticeable. So if you have two-year-old cheddar, you'll start to see them. Yeah, the when you get to that 36-month Gouda, which we'll do next, I'll do with you my 10-year. You'll notice them in all those cheeses.
Let me find that one. Have it here in my pile of cheeses.
The Clarina.
Yeah, I think here it is. Oh yeah, I've got the Clarina now, and I'll unwrap it. So the Clarina is the most aged of the ones that I have. You got one that's three times as old. I feel like it's the archaeology version of it.
I'm not the cheese dude for nothing, you know.
Yeah, you're earning your title. This one is 36 months old, so it's three years aged minimum.
You see all those little white spots?
Yeah, I see white spots. Yeah,
that's where those crystals are starting to come out of solution. That's what causes that differentiation in color. And then you see the one hole that looks kind of round and smooth.
Yes.
That is the same gas that causes Swiss cheese to have a bazillion round holes occasionally gets into Dutch style cheeses, and you'll get small pea size holes in them. That's quite common. Mine has that as well.
Do the holes themselves affect flavor?
No, they will eventually, when they're young, they'll have a little bit of moisture inside them. Water, basically. As they age, that will dry out, and you'll start to see. I had one here. Let me see if you can see that. You see that white spot?
Oh yeah, I see it on yours. Yeah, that's really that looks like mold almost. Yeah,
it's calcium lactate and tyrosine. It's the crystal stuff that starts to dry out from the inside of the cheese, and it deposits itself in those open holes. So amazing. You'll see that as it gets really old.
So that makes sense as the aging, but also now in this one's much firmer to the touch. It's hard. It could be gradable. I guess you could grate it on food. Would people, again, would be a waste of this cheese to grate it onto other
food? Absolutely. But it would be great. It would be outstanding. Now, one thing about it, feel the texture in it still when you bite it and when you squeeze into it, it's still soft enough to squeeze. You can get your fingernail into it and such.
Yeah.
This one is 10 years old, and it is still soft enough to squeeze.
Is that from the fats and the oils that allow for that? Because the moisture has got to be pretty well gone.
It's a whole milk cheese, so it's got about even amount of fat and protein from the start.
Yeah. So this is like this one is 36 months as opposed to 10 months. So it's been aged three and a half times as long as the first. Gouda, totally right. Different flavor profile.
Completely.
I'm tasting almost like a butterscotch kind of quality.
Caramel butterscotch dipped in peat whiskey. The first time I tasted a 40-month-old cheese called San Cantor, I was doing a write-up on it, and the first thing that came to my mind when I put it in my mouth was caramel butterscotch dipped in peat whiskey. You know, exactly what it tastes like, man. And this one is 10 years old. And it just tastes more like that.
Yeah.
More intense like that.
Wow. But it's so different from cheeses that we're used to in, the, you know, American style cheeses.
Yep.
And then complex. Mm. The flavors, they linger in your palate. It's unbelievable.
God, yes.
I'm loving it. Well, we've gotten through three of my six cheeses.
Yep.
Which might mean that this is a good time for us to take a little break.
Definitely.
Should I be, and then for the benefit of those people who want to do their own tastings, in between eat a piece of bread or a cracker or something?
I would do something like that, or enough time. If you give enough time, your natural saliva will clean most of it off of your palate. But I usually keep little crusty brown breads, a little bite of it.
Yeah, I've got a little piece here.
Right. You've seen how Gouda goes from, you know, fudgy and dense. You've probably had young Gouda or Gouda, you know, mild Gouda.
That's what most of us are used to. Is
exactly
nothing like what these taste like.
That's 2 to 3 months old. Then you get into the 10 month. Then you get into the, you know, year and a half and the 3 year and the 5 year and 10 year. You can buy at least 5 year Gouda on the market. It's available.
Now the 10 year piece that you have, is it 10 years because you've kept it for another 5 years?
Yeah, it's because I took a wheel of 3 year Gouda and aged it for another 7 years.
Do you have your own little cheese, cellar or?
Yeah, it's called a refrigerator.
You do it right in the fridge, huh?
Yeah, I have a big commercial fridge that's, you know, reach in style fridge. And I have it blocked and sectioned in half where one side's wetter than the other.
Uh-huh.
But they're both just cold, and you turn this, you get big pieces and turn them over every couple of months.
Wrap them in anything?
Age them out.
You just leave them exposed, or do you wrap them?
Oh, no. They're all vacuum packed.
Oh,
so I have them cryovac.
Uh-huh.
And then I open the cryovac and I take a plug and take it out and taste it and see what it's doing.
Wow.
And I put the plug back in and seal it off with the food grade wax. And put it back in and vacuum it out and see what it does 6 months from now.
For people who don't have vacuum pack set up at their house, what would be the best way for them to store cheese if they're planning to keep it, you know, a chunk for 6 months or longer?
If you don't have a seal-a-meal type thing, don't even try.
Don't use plastic wrap or anything like that.
It doesn't work. It's a plastic wrap, the cling film. Even if you're a perfect wrap person, you get every air bubble out, you triple wrap it, it's a temporary solution. It's not a permanent thing. If you've got them, you know, if you've got one of those little seal-a-meal deals,
yeah,
you can use those and keep cheese for quite a while. But other than that, no, don't try aging to get it home.
But if it's in a vacuum, does that affect the fermentation flavor development since it doesn't have, it's an anaerobic sort of
exactly. Environment? That 100 years ago, I would have said yes. Today, not so much. Most of the cheese manufacturers, they've changed their recipes to allow for anaerobic ripening because they know that the cheeses are going to be vacuumed before they go anywhere. There's a few.
So in other words, some of the bacteria that are that are used in the recipe are anaerobic, the kind that can function
yep.
outside of an oxygenated environment. Right.
Wow. And that came about, but the cheddar recipes and all those recipes had to be changed when vacuum packing came into being, because they're no longer have oxygen.
No wonder cheese making has become like so many other artisan crafts, such an obsessive hobby and career probably, mm-hmm. and why more and more farmstead cheese companies are coming into existence, because once you get sucked down that rabbit hole,
oh,
it's like fathomless.
It is. There's a reason that I got bored with everything I've ever done in a matter of days, weeks, or months. And cheese has kept me interested for 30 years.
Yeah, you can't get to the bottom of it. It just keeps going and going and going.
There's so much more to learn. So let's move on let's take our break.
Yeah, let's take a little break, and I'm going to let my palate kind of recover from and savor what's still on there. And we'll come back in just a moment with part two of our what category of cheese are we talking? What's the name of
this? They're called these are hard cheeses. This is the hard cheese category. This is the hard cheeses. We've done our Gouda run. Next, we're going to go into Northern Italy and see what they do.
Fantastic. Join us in part two with Mark Todd, the cheese dude, on Pizza Quest.
Excellent.
We'll be right back with more Pizza Quest right after this break.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Ithaca, helping you to plan your next getaway. Ithaca has waterfalls and wineries, art and theater, outdoor recreation, and family fun. The area is famous for its glacier-carved gorges, co-op-run businesses, and cultural influences from Cornell University and Ithaca College. The area is well known for its local cideries, which are leading the way in America's cider revival. You can hear from the region's cider makers directly on HRN's series Hardcore. There is something really special about Ithaca's climate for cultivating delicious apples steeped in history and terroir. The second season of Hardcore is out now. You can learn all about apples and fermentation and dive into how cider makers and their communities are working to create an equitable industry and one that is resilient to climate change. Listen to Hardcore on your favorite podcast app.
HRN is home to transformative exchanges about food. We hope our diverse lineup of shows opens your eyes, educates, and empowers.
Thanks to HRN, I ventured into the world of cooking with sumac, and I have not looked back since.
I was listening to A Taste of the Past with my mom, and there was an episode about the history of American food. It inspired me to make it the subject of my final social studies project, and I ended up getting an A.
Join us during our summer membership drive by donating and becoming a member. Members play an essential role in keeping nonprofit food radio on the air. Go to heritageradionetwork.org/donate to become a member today. We thank you for your support.
Welcome back to Pizza Quest with Peter Reinhardt and my friend and guest, Mark Todd, the cheese dude, coming from my old stomping grounds, the West County of Sonoma County on the Russian River, or in the Russian River area. I don't know if you're right on the river or if you're in the woods or where you're buried back there in that.
I'm about 300 feet up the hill from it. If the sun's just right, I can see the sun gleam, bounce off the river through the trees. Awesome.
And you're like in the Monte Rio area, right?
Right in Monte Rio.
Which is on the way to the ocean. Yes. I think the river runs out in where Jenner, if I recall.
Correct.
And then suddenly you're in the Pacific Ocean. And there's so much in the West County that goes on there that it's one of the most fascinating, wonderful places to live. I cherish the time that I lived out there. And not just grapes, not just
wine. Come on back.
I'm coming. So, Mark, we were talking in part one here about the subtle nuances on the category that we would call Gouda, or the Dutch would call Gouda cheeses, and how there's so many deviations and variations of how this can be made. But ultimately, it comes down to the cocktail of microorganisms and then the recipe itself in terms of water temperature, milk temperature, aging, you know, everything else that factors in. And the three cows that we tasted, one with goat cheese, one with the two with cow's milk, were so different from each other and yet amazingly complex. And and then the one that was the aged one, the 3.5 year one, had so many tones of caramel and butterscotch. And I mean, it starts going into, it opens up a whole realm of flavor analogies, I guess is the best way to say it. And that's how you can get your head around it. We're about to go into another category of cheeses that are slightly different. But when we were talking about it, it made me remember something that came up on our bread symposium last year, was that studies that are being done at North Carolina State on sourdoughs, sourdough breads, and the variations is very parallel to the cheese world. In fact, at one time when I thought I wanted to be a cheesemaker, I decided that I could never be careful and precise enough to be a good cheesemaker. So I would go for bread, which is much more forgiving, you know, at least I thought it was. And of course, what we found is that in the studies and analyzing the various sourdough starters that are that exist all around the world, and then how the same bread made from the same starter can still taste different from somebody else's based on how they make it. But another factor that they determined was that the hands themselves of the bread maker, whoever's handling that dough, is could affect, because sourdough is aged longer than regular bread, so these flavors have a chance to develop, that they found even a difference between the types of bacteria and yeast that will exist in a woman's hands versus a man's hands. And they're starting to be able to get drilled down that deep to say, to be able to identify the nuances of flavors, all based on, again, the microorganisms that are transmitted into that product.
But and the thing, the part of that is deeper than just the hands. It's the hands and where those hands have been, where they live, what part of the county they live in, because the yeasts that are in that area will stick to their skin. They'll bring it in and to add that to the yeast that are already in the bread. It's also the yeasts and all the stuff in the air in the area you're making. So if I make it here, the bacteria, mold, and yeasts that are in the air here are different than they are where you live. So even if you came here with your same hands and made it here, it would be different because it's a wild product. It's a living product. That's one of the things that made cheese so fascinating for me, is it's basically four ingredients. It's starter culture, salt, rennet, milk. That's it. You know, and there's thousands of ways you can make it different. Bread is the same thing. And it's the influence of terroir, and it's the type of ingredients you use, how you deal with them, the recipe you follow. And every one of those makes a different product. Beer is the same thing. Go to Belgium, where they still make wild yeast beers called lambics.
Yes.
That wild yeast is different every day.
Yeah.
So every day the beer is going to be a little different that day. And that's how we've been doing it for thousands and thousands of years. The way we do it now with measured, you know, culture houses and people that, you know, give you pure strains of this bacteria, that's all new.
Yeah.
But we've been making this preservation method for tens of thousands of years.
And this all falls under the sort of the larger umbrella of fermentation. When you say all the things we're talking about, the things that are alive, that because through fermentation, and why there's so many parallels between beer, cheese, milk, wine, you name it. But the cheese, the thing that, you know, I'm appreciating as we talk about this cheese, is it has time. It can be given the time to really develop those flavors. I guess you can do that with wine and other products, but you rarely see it with bread. You rarely see it with beer that it gets aged like this. But
Belgium ages beer because they learned that if you age hops, if you harvest them and let them age for a year or 2 years, the bitterness drops like a rock. The preservative quality remains very high. So you can make beers with a huge amount of hops in them that are not bitter at all.
They're not.
So Belgian beers can be laid down for a decade or more.
That's awesome. And I'm sure, just as there are people like you, cheese dudes, who are obsessed with cheese, there are beer dudes and there are wine dudes and obviously bread dudes, you know,
I know a lot of them that are
exploring these same, you know, depths of potential And which is what makes it so fascinating. And I think
absolutely
fermentation is the sort of the obsession of the day, you know, is that yes, so many people are sucked into that world. Well, we've got three cheeses that now one is an American style Parmesan.
We're going to start with that one.
And another is an authentic Parmesan, or authentic meaning that it comes from Parma. And then the third is a Romano made from sheep's milk. So let's start with the American style. And I've got a chunk of it here that's been aging in my refrigerator.
Right.
And like just like you were saying, I haven't vacuum packed it. I've just sort of let it happen. But I'm going to shave off a piece.
So that will have lost a tremendous amount of moisture, water, because of how it was wrapped and stored.
Yeah.
So that one is going to be quite fairly crumbly, I'm guessing.
Let's try it. Yeah, it seems like it's definitely hard, firm.
Uh-huh.
And it's chewy, you know.
Mm-hmm. But it's not granular.
No, it doesn't have those grains. Those crystals. The flavor is coming out. The more I chew it, I'm getting more and more flavor emerging.
So right about now, you should be getting just a hint of tropical fruit in the back. Just a little bit of hint. Like you would smell a pineapple upside down cake down the street, but you're not actually eating it.
Yeah. A hint of a pineapple-ish kind of thing. Yeah. But really, really, really subtle.
It is.
And the cheese, of course, is delicious, but
It finishes fairly sweet.
Yeah.
The depth of flavor is not broad yet. It's still fairly narrow in its flavor profile. That's about 12 months, I guess. The one I have is about 12 to 14 months. And you can buy Parmesan that young. You can buy Grana Padano that young. And it's legal. It just doesn't have as much flavor as it will shortly.
I was going to bring a piece of Grana Padano today, but the store didn't have it. Padano.
Yes.
But what's the difference? I think there's some general confusion about what's the difference.
If you go to Italy and you look at a map of Northern Italy, the Po River Valley is huge. It goes all the way from Asti at one side, all the way down to Bologna on the other side, and Verona in that area. So there's that whole area has been making mountain cheeses for 2,000 years. The little area of Reggio Emilia, Parma, and a little section of Bologna are where Parmesan comes from. It's a little subset of this whole Po Valley. The rest of that Po Valley, that's where Grana Padano comes from.
So it's essentially the same cheese, just a different valley.
Yes, different part of the same valley.
But the method is the same. The bacterias are the same.
They don't actually use starter culture. That's one of the unique things. There is no starter culture in Parmigiano Reggiano. It is strictly milk, salt, and rennet. That's it.
And just picks up its fermentation microorganisms from the atmosphere. From
that region.
But with Grana Padano, they actually introduce?
Made the same way.
If somebody says, you know, I prefer using Grana Padano to Parmigiano, they're really just saying, I just have a preference for this valley over that valley.
Yeah, the Grana Padano is released at 10 months legally. Parmesan has to be at least 12 before they put those dots on it. They brand it. Most Grana Padano is eaten at about 16 months. It's a younger version. Most Parmesan is eaten at about 2 years.
Well, that's what I've got here now. I've got a two-year Parmigiano Reggiano.
Yep.
So we'll compare this to the American piece that we just tasted.
Now that one, just bust a chunk by hand and see what it does.
Oh, well, just kind of crumbles.
You'll see that it breaks right on the Grana texture. They call these cheeses Grana because the way the curds are cut, they're cut very small. And when they pack back together, that's what you get, these little bitty curds. So when it breaks, it breaks right along a curd structure.
The
big difference between Parmesan and all the rest of the mountain cheeses we're going to talk about is that Parmesan is part skim. It is part skim cheese. So when you chew on this one, you'll see that grana structure remains all the way as long as you chew it.
That's interesting that you would think, being such a famous, you know, highly prized, she said it would have, you know, full fat or this or that, but it's really, and because I remember I actually got to go to a cheesery in the Parma area and saw it being made, saw the wheels being made, and it is, and they were basically, you know, they're talking about skim milk, using skim milk.
Yep. But you can make mascarpone out of the cream and Parmesan out of that.
Yeah, even after they separated it and they had the whey and everything else, they were making ricotta cheese. They were still getting curds out of that that runoff.
You know what the word ricotta means?
No.
Recooked.
Recooked.
All you can do is out of mozzarella, out of Parmesan, you recook the whey and you get another protein out. The Italians never let any food get out the door.
Exactly. Trust me. Yeah. Exactly. Well, of course, this cheese definitely has, you know, much more complex, intense flavor than the first version.
But you still get that incredible, especially when you break a piece open and first smell it, you get that straight up pineapple aroma. That Parmigiano Reggiano is just famous. It has exactly the same ester that makes the skin of a pineapple smell like pineapple.
Interesting. So see, now that you provided the language to match the aroma, now I get it. You know, I see, you smell it and you go, wow, that's really cool what it is, but you can't, if you don't have the words or.
Right.
But that is, so now I notice the pineapple. It's pretty
right. Cool. And if you're really good with tropical flavors, it also has a little bit of a mango flavor. It's also got a little bit of a guava flavor, green guava. But pineapple is the one you hit most.
It's the most prominent. And I suppose if you age it even longer,
that drops. The tropical fruit flavor drops like a rock between about 32 and 36 months.
And it's replaced by what? More granularness or?
I would say nutty richness. You know, it retains that richness that you get here, but it loses that tropical fruit flavor and just becomes a strong cheese, sweet but strong. But I don't usually get. You can buy Reggiano up to 5 years or more, but I don't eat it past two. I like it at 24 months. It's perfect.
So then you've kind of, that's the peak for you.
Yep.
Wow.
22 to 28, somewhere in there is when that tropical pineapple really peaks.
Well, that's where we are with this one, because the one I have is 24.
That's when they sell it to Americans, because that's what we like.
Now, when they say 24, then there's also travel time. There's how long it's sat in the store. Does that add any qualities to the cheese?
It ages it. It makes so it
older. It could actually be 32 months by now. So that time that it's been in a cut wheel and everything still counts as part of its aging process.
If in the whole wheel form, it will continue to age at a relatively even rate. Once you bust the wheel, it will not ripen evenly anymore.
Okay.
It'll still ripen. It just, because you've changed the geometry of it, it will ripen differently now. But even if you bust a wheel of Parm into little wedges and cryovac each one, they will still continue to age if you leave them in a fridge for years, just differently than they would if they were in a whole wheel.
Well, okay, we've got one more cheese to try. This is, again, a cheese that I think Americans tend to think of Romano and Parmigiano as very similar, but they're really different, especially if it's...
Did you do your Piave Vecchio?
Oh, yeah, that's the one I was...
No, you should have two left.
Piave
Vecchio and the Romano.
Oh my gosh, you're right. Here it is.
Okay. So now I'm using a dry jack, which has brown cocoa coating.
I love dry jack. That's where I live, very, very close to the Velo.
I'm telling the people that don't know that it's got a cocoa coating.
They kind of roll it in a cocoa paste.
They rub it.
But they told me that doesn't really add much to the cheese. Nope. It's just there for,
Seals the rind.
Yeah.
It just seals out the rind, keeps molding. But that
has often been referred to as the American Parmesan, right?
And some people call it that, and they're dead wrong, because it's not Parmesan. It's much closer to Asiago or Piave Vecchio.
Ah, okay.
Because Asiago and Piave Vecchio are whole milk cheeses. They age them out like they do a Parmesan, but they're made with whole milk.
Oh.
Parmesan is part skim. That's why Parmesan can be grated.
Uh-huh.
Asiago doesn't really like to be grated. If you try to grate it, it gums up the grater because it's made with whole milk. It's still softer to the touch.
That's interesting. That's something I didn't know. And probably many people didn't know that it was that's a very important differentiator, mm-hmm. that it's whole milk.
Yep.
So Asiago is not just a region of Italy that has its own little style, it's
a recipe, just like every other cheese. It's a recipe that came from that region of Veneto and Asiago area. The one you have there, you should be able to, it should bend just a little before it breaks.
A little bit.
Uh-huh. And now then smell that inside, crush it and smell the inside. It's nice, but you get none of that tropical fruit.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, right. No tropical, but it is a really nice aroma, I have to say.
Absolutely.
Let me see what this one is.
12 month.
So 12 month. Okay.
Vecchio means extra aged. Piave is the cheese. The Vecchio version is a 12 month version.
There's almost a sweetness at the front end of this one.
Right. And then as it starts to finish, it'll start to get a little nuttier.
Uh-huh.
You'll start to get almond kind of a flavor in the back. And the salt in the cheese doesn't really come on until at the very end. It finishes just a little hint of salt.
You say it there. I'm tasting it here. Exactly as you're saying it. Yeah. The saltiness is only just now coming out. It's right. Amazing.
And the whole milkness of it. The fat hits your tongue first, and that's what you start to notice first. And then at the very end, you start to get the subtle flavors around that milk. But that cheese it shreds beautifully. It doesn't grate as well, but it shreds beautifully. And you can use that in place of Parmesan for any of the pasta topping type applications. It will bring a little bit a different rustic flavor to the dish than the Parmesan, which is a little bit sweeter.
So when somebody calls for a dry Jack or mm-hmm. dry Sonoma Jack cheese, Asiago would be a good swap out. And then this one, this one is called
Piave Vecchio.
Piave Vecchio, which what does that mean? What does that refer to?
Piave is the name of the cheese. I think it's actually a town. I won't swear to that, but it's the name of the cheese is Piave, and they sell it young, medium, and old. The old version is Vecchio, meaning extra age. The word Vecchio means extra age. You can buy Parmigiano Vecchio that's like 3 to 5 year age.
Extra age. I see. So this is an extra age, and it falls more in the category of Asiago.
Correct.
Sonoma Dry Jack. And then, of course, its own. I've never heard of it before because I'm not a cheese expert like you. But
it's an outstanding cheese.
It's so good. Yeah, I'm saying it's so good. I'm surprised that I haven't.
In the same way that you have that younger version of Gouda and then the aged version of Gouda.
Yeah.
The younger version of this Vecchio, the Piave, the regular Piave, is a different flavor. It's creamier. It's softer. It's more like a table cheese.
It would have to be with all that fat.
Exactly. But it's still a beautiful cheese. Like Monterey Jack goes from creamy, buttery, melt like crazy all the way through hard, knock on wood, hard as a rock type cheese. That's one of the things I find fascinating is cheese is a living food, and how you make it, how you age it, how you treat it, all of that makes a difference in what you end up with. Now this one, the last one we have is sheep's milk. And I kept this one to the last because it is aged anywhere from 5 to 8 months. And that's much less than everything else we've been eating. But because it's a sheep's milk, you're going to see, and the way they make it, you're going to see that it has plenty of flavor.
Yeah, a lot of earthiness as I'm smelling it.
Yeah. Tell your real estate agent to go away.
Are they calling again?
Yeah.
No.
Oh, I heard one. I thought I heard it. My bad. But now when you smell this, the first thing you smell is funkiness.
Yeah, a little funky.
It's got a beautiful, I wouldn't even, I don't, this one's hard to describe for me. it's got a sharpness, a piquantness to it, but it's more earthy and
a little barnyardy.
Younger versions can even be a little soapy.
Soapy, huh? Interesting.
Mm-hmm. This one, mine is beautiful. Mm. Texture is very granular.
Yeah. Yeah. And yet, as young as it is, it's got a tremendous robustness to it.
Absolutely. Like rip your face off robust.
Yeah.
And I've had this cheese aged up to 4 or 5 years. And let me tell you, when you finish this, you notice your tongue's got some heat on it. Mm. It's got a little acidic heat.
Uh-huh.
That's from an enzyme called lipase, which is naturally occurring in sheep's milk.
Uh-huh.
And that heat that you get on your tongue, depending upon how old this cheese is, can be anywhere from mildly tingly to a little bit full to scrape your tongue off.
Yeah. And I'm not, and unfortunately the piece I have is, I guess, only just giving me a little buzz, you know, not as much as what you're describing, but I can. So what, a lot of times the Romano and the Parmesans are sometimes, you know, used.
They're not at all alike, as you've seen here.
Yeah. So they would have different functions and different foods to pair with more appropriately.
One thing that I find interesting, Romano is one of the oldest cheeses in the world. It goes back at least until the early Roman days, probably the Etruscan days, which is 500 to 800 BC.
Yeah.
And that cheese, the hard cheeses, every region along the coast of Italy made a hard cheese that they would age in caves. And they had, every area had their own Romano, you know, Sardo, everywhere. In today's world, almost probably 95% of the sheep's milk Romano in the world isn't made in Rome or anywhere near it. It's made in Sardinia. That's where almost all of it comes from now. And the PDO lists Sardinia as the primary place that is made.
Is there something about the Sardinian atmosphere and culture that makes it work well for this cheese?
Well, yeah, it does. It works great. But the main reason it's made there is they got like 3.7 million sheep.
Sheep culture, yeah. So
they got 1.3 million, I don't know. They got millions of sheep on Sardinia. So that is where a lot of sheep's milk cheeses are made.
Interesting. So this has been so fascinating. I mean, if, like you say, it's fathomless. We've only been, talking today about one little subsection of the cheese world. Mm-hmm. It's a big subsection of the cheese world, the dry, the hard cheeses. We've each time we get together, I feel like I'm just scratching the surface of my knowledge, but I come away with so many new thoughts about it. And also the connections to the other things, the other realm of fermentation, the parallels. Mm-hmm. And one other thing that was triggered in today's conversation, when we were talking about, how some cheeses can even develop stinky flavors and things like that. And we were talking about how the hand, didn't you say that there's a type of cheese called hand cheese?
Hand cheese from Germany that's beyond aromatic.
Super stinking, durian quality.
And it has the texture of a Super Bowl. I mean, it's like chewing rubber. It's all 100% protein, no fat. And it ages very oddly because of the way it's made. And it's small with lots of surface area, so it ages quick. And it becomes it's an acquired taste. I think you have to grow up with it.
I don't know that we could, whether it would be worth it for us to work that into a taste, but it got me thinking that would the next category for us, the next time we get together, I'm going to have you back, go into stinky cheeses, or is there something in between we should do first?
I'm just the guide. You are the one who wants to experience.
You're the Virgil of the cheese world for us, taking us through the corridors of cheeseness.
You tell me what you want to learn about. I will figure up a good way to do it. We've done some of the basic stuff now, the cheddars, the pasta filata. We've done hard cheese. You know, if you want to go into the funky, you know, barnyardy, stinky orange rind stuff, there's a ton of those out
there.
But
what about, but there's other categories to make. I mean, I feel like once we get into that, it's almost like you can't go back. It's like you've come to the ultimate frontier. Well,
there's lots of semi-soft cheeses that we have not done. And yeah, that's the largest family. That's where you get your mild Gouda, your Fontina, your Monterey, you know, mild Monterey Jacks.
And where do Swiss cheeses like?
Kind of considered
Alpines.
They're Alpine. They normally refer to those as Alpine. And those are cheeses that are made in Austria, Switzerland, Northern Italy, parts of France, parts of Germany. They're anywhere the Alps hit.
There would be best to keep that as its own separate category, do that as its own, as one, as a whole show, or
we can
get in with the, sure. Do we work in with the semi-sauce?
That's a good way to do it. You know, we can do, it depending on what you can get. If you can find an American made baby Swiss, which is a whole milk cheese that has very little to do with Swiss, but it is a style of Swiss. And you can do regular Swiss. Regular Emmental is a part skim, very dense. We can do Gruyere, we can do Appenzell, and we could do, you don't have to do it, but they make a cheese called Sprinz, which is virtually identical to Parmesan. They've been making that. That's the thing about these cheeses. We call them, you know, Parma, like that's the only place it was made. Those big cheeses were made everywhere in the Alps because you had caves in the mountains that were 50 degrees. Guess what? It stores cheese.
Yeah.
Stick cheeses in, you can keep them for years. The bigger you make them, the longer they last. That's where we started getting these huge wheels of cheese.
Yeah. It all starts to make sense when you connect the dots for us, Mark. So we really appreciate that. I'm thinking, as much as I'm fascinated by the stinky cheese category, I feel we should hold that out a couple. Let's get a couple of the other ones that we haven't. Either we'll talk about it, either do an Alpine show, or we'll do the semi-softs. Bring some of the cheeses that I think the ones that are the most commonly recognizable by Americans, so that we can expand everyone's understanding of those cheeses better.
Absolutely.
So again, that's
a show in itself.
I really appreciate you being here today and being back with us. The Cheese Dude returns, and hopefully we'll return again soon. Mark Todd, thank you, and thank all of you for listening and watching today. On Pizza Quest, we'll continue the conversation. We'll be talking about lots of other subjects. This year, we really want to get into what we're doing with Mark and the cheese. We want to get into the artisan categories that are connected to, but not necessarily pizza direct, so that we can really, make those connections. I call it connecting the dots. And I love doing that. And I love that you've been able to do that with us today. So thank you, Mark.
Thanks,
we'll see you again. In the fall, as the fall is getting closer, I'm sure you're going to be thinking about mushroom hunting. So we'll have to talk about that again. And that could be another show altogether.
Absolutely.
Thank you all for joining us today. We'll see you on the next episode of Pizza Quest. And Mark, happy hunting.
Thanks, Peter. Enjoy. Thanks.
Pizza Quest with Peter Reinhardt is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/subscribe.